10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Did you hear that voice, James Copeland? He was just voted by Radio Inc. as one of 30, and now I'm supposed to say 30 under 30. No, they didn't do that part. They just said, here are a bunch of 30-year-olds that we know. That's all they did for him. And you know what I did all day? I tried to make my printer work. How about you?
There's an old guy who's on the air, and they call him Sterling. The bosses hired him on a dare, and they call him Sterling. Kind of hip, kind of odd,
Sterling.
Kind of smart, kind of strange,
Sterling.
A different show that's here to stay, and they call it
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
All right, it's 8 minutes past the hour. 8 minutes past the hour. National radio show, Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday night. Now, let me describe to you the novel that you would write from your groin if you had the courage or the skill. Here's what it would be. Now, be honest. It would be about outer space. We were all obsessed with outer space. The History Channel suddenly discovered the only history there is outer space, the outer space. And then in it, we would include various layers of the dark arts of lesbianism. That'd be layered in like a good cake on the British Great Bake Off. Off. Did you hear what I said? Bake Off. And we would make sure that it had a female point of view, because men and women both know it is far more erotic if a woman does whatever it is we need to have done. And then you throw in the possibility of conflict, major conflict. Isn't this what we want? A book that has lesbianism, romance, conflict, and outer space. And that's why I fell in love with Thea Landon's writing. And Thea Landon is live tonight. Oh, my gosh, Thea, a special guest appearance on Sterling every damn Sunday. Thea, welcome to the big show.
Hi, Walter. As always, thank you so much for having me on. It's so great to talk to you.
You're a great writer, a prolific writer, and I am very grateful that you're on Sterling every damn night, six nights a week. Her contributions are remarkable, wonderful, and I'm grateful for them. It is the giving season, and therefore I believe that every Midnight Misfit needs to buy at least one of your books to make into a gift. What a great Secret Santa at work, for somebody at work to open up that package, and there's one of your smutty books. What could be better for somebody's career than that? Please tell us which books you are heralding at this time of year.
Well, if you go to my website, thealandon.com, and if you click on a book and it tells you there's a signed paperback, that is the best gift you can put under a tree for anyone. I sign them. I put all sorts of extra goodies in the package, like bookmarks, stickers. I think I have some pens left over from my order of 500 pens a few years ago. I know that you were advertising the lesbians in space because those are super fun. But since it is December, it's the end of the year, I am a data person. I love spreadsheets. I love statistics. And my best seller this year is not lesbians in space, unfortunately. It's actually a boring straight romance here on Earth. But it is spicy, of course. You always know you're going to get at least one explicit scene in any of my books.
What fetish does it feature? And there's a tongue twister.
It is a murder mystery. It's my favorite plot of everyone is stranded in a remote location and the guests start dying one by one. Yes. And the main character doesn't know if the love interest is the serial killer who's been picking people off. She winds up in his bedroom. Nothing super kinky in this one. His hands may wind up near her throat at some point, and then she really starts thinking, uh-oh, is he the killer? But, of course, you know, I can't spoil anything here.
I think, I'll tell you a secret. In a focus group I did a few years ago, it was all women, 25 to 54-year-old women in this focus group. And we asked them, when you're alone, kids are out, husband's gone for a couple days, and you have the house to yourself for 2 or 3 days, what do you do? And finally, it was dead silent. And finally, one of them goes, the Lifetime movie. The Lifetime movie. They all went, yes, the Lifetime movie. And I'm like, they should have a Lifetime movie segment of your books. They should make your top 5 books into Lifetime movies. They'd be perfect.
I would not turn down that opportunity. If you know anyone at Lifetime, please get them in touch with me.
That's going to be my mission now. It is the right thing for them and for you. A perfect marriage. What are your other hot sellers, please, Thea Landon?
Okay. I just realized, of course, I forgot to mention the title of that one. It's Seductive Suspect. Is She in Bed with a Serial Killer? Also out this year was a space romance, but again, it's a straight romance. Out of Orbit, the female main character is a human. Her love interest is an alien. And let's just say everything is bigger in outer space.
All right,
it's fiction. We might as well have fun with it.
Please say the name of that book again and describe and give us that description again. That was you were fleeting there. Don't fleet on that. On every word, Thea. Every word.
I will take a deep breath and slow down. The title of that book is Out of Orbit, featuring a female human, and she crash lands on an unknown planet and meets a very large, hulking, muscular, thick alien. And he is the love interest in this book.
And what's the book called?
Out of Orbit.
Out of Orbit. That's the book.
Yes.
Midnight Misfits, that I would suggest you order from Thea Landon's website on Amazon, Out of Orbit. It features a endowed alien. Got it? An endowed alien. What else would you want? What a great gift to give to your best friend, to your lesbian friends, to your lust-oriented friends, which means all of your friends. Thea Landon, L-A-N-D-E-N. What's the name of your store on Amazon?
If you type in my name, it will give you my full listing. And again, if you go to my own website, that will take you to all the various links, either Amazon, a signed paperback directly from me with all the goodies I mentioned before, and I'm starting to get into audiobooks too. So those links will also be on my website.
It's better for Thea if you actually go to her website to buy the books, and you need to buy the books because you're out of time, buddy. You don't have any more time. You imagine you're going to get that perfect gift for your friend, your romance. No, you're out of time. You need to get a Thea Landon book, L-A-N-D-E-N, and your website is what? What's it called? What's the name?
Very easy, thealandon.com. That will tell you everything you ever needed to know about me and my books.
And the name of that book that I really liked with the endowed alien, what's the name of that book again?
Out of Orbit.
Now, you see, Thea is obviously a writer, and I am obviously not a writer. I'm a too much talking-er. And the reason I kept annoying her to repeat the titles is because you can't write it down. You're driving. And it usually takes about 3 mentions before anybody listening can remember it. That's why I asked you to do it again, Thea. So thank you for doing it.
Oh, that's good information to know. I'll keep that in mind.
All right. That's the legendary Thea Landon, smutty book author, self-described smutty book author, with Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Hi, I'm retired detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, find out what happened to the Brooklyn dirtbag accused of spitting in women's faces. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Beloved community leaders, killers found. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here, soon to be starring on stage together.
in love letters.
It's been a long time since we've been on stage together, babe, but we'll do the best we can.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
This is Matthias Bohm Bell. Coming up, my Hollywood report on movies. Live on Sterling Every Damn Night.
We've totally gone nuts. Details later. The people of Walmart, Sterling, Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Happy Hanukkah to you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling Every Damn Night. Oi, 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 oi.
Walter Sterling at 22 past the hour, coast to coast from WGAN to KFBK in Sacramento. Welcome. This is what a giant live radio show is supposed to sound like. And I have a live line. You want the phone number? You ready? 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. And one of the great advantages of being the only live show on the radio at this time, and it could be any night. Oh, my God, it could be any night. Shame on them. I have updates for you on the horror show at Brown University this weekend and at Bondi Beach this weekend. Let's get an update on the situation at Brown University.
The newest information there, the person of interest in custody is in their 20s. Some other information that has been trickling out. Not all victims' families have been contacted, and that is the explanation, according to the mayor, why the names have not been released of the victims up until this point. So some family members are in transit. They've been unable to contact them, and so they are holding off on releasing identities at this point.
And that's the situation at Brown University, where there were two students killed by some guy walking by, just some guy. And then horrendous, absolutely horrendous shootings at Bondi Beach. Bondi Beach is obviously a famous beach in Sydney, Australia. It's a magnificent beach. I had the privilege of being there couple times, and it's just beautiful. It is their equivalent of it's like the Santa Monica Beach. That's what it looks a lot like. Here's the situation on the shootings at Bondi Beach in Australia.
Australian leaders are investigating the shooting as a terrorist attack. At least 15 people plus one of two shooters have died, and 42 people remain in the hospital following the shooting at Sydney's Bondi Beach, according to authorities. And the shooting happened on the first night of Hanukkah, a time of celebration for the Jewish community. But instead, officials say they were targeted, with emergency calls coming in around 6:45 in the evening. The Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says that this was an anti-Semitic attack, and it was pure evil.
It is pure evil. Let me share with you who it's going to turn out to be that did these shootings. It's always the same guy. In our culture, we have princes and bums. And there are certain ages where each one of us is a prince or a princess. In our culture, we exalt teenagers. We make everything possible to appeal to teenagers. The video games, the video game consoles, software for the computer, everything for a teenager is cherished. And then, when a teenager, a man, turns 22, 23, he's no longer a teenager. He's no longer exalted. And there's the trouble. The transition from teenager to adult responsibilities does not always go well. If they're able to get a job, be in the military, get married, fall in love, have a role. If they have a role after they are no longer a teenager, things will go good enough. Oh, he might be late a couple times. Might get a little drunk two or three times a month, but things will go well. But then there's this other group of men who leave the teenage years, and they go forth and they can't get a role. They don't know what they want to do. They don't join the military. They're at home, and they're living off the king and queen. They're living off the king and queen on the sofa, not doing anything. They don't have a role. And I would suggest to you that those are the most dangerous people in the world because they're young. They have capabilities. They are strong physically, strong enough mentally. They have access to our culture. They have access to all of the commerce of our culture, the gun shops, the Dairy Queen. They have access to everything. But if they don't have a role, they have no goals. They have no, what am I going to do with this? Instead, mom and dad are paying for them and making dinner for them and making lunch for them. They have no role. They are dangerous because rudderless, without direction, at that point in life, they are going to seek excitement in all of its forms. They are going to go out and look for, they're in the strip clubs, they're at the shooting range. They will seek excitement in all of its forms. And if they don't have a mental stability, if they're not grounded in other things, they do things like walk into an elementary school and kill kids. That's who it is. It's always the same guy. 27, 28, lives at home with mom and dad, doesn't have a job, recently got fired, might have been in the military a while ago, that didn't do great, no girlfriend. Have we heard of any of these guys, any of these shooters? Any of them have a girlfriend, a boyfriend? No, they don't have no solid they have no solid adult relationships except mom and dad. But that's not an adult relationship, is it? That's a dependent 9-year-old relationship. That's who it's going to turn out to be. That's who we're going to hear on Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock on that news cycle. And they have found the shooter of the Bondi Beach. They found the shooter at Brown University. They know who it is now. I'll tell you who it is now. It's going to be a 28, 29-year-old man who lives at home, has no role, no job, not in the military, no girlfriend. That's who it is. And this has always been so. This isn't new. This is not a new phenomenon. The guys who don't have work, don't have a role, don't have any responsibility or dependency. No one's dependent on them. No one's dependent on them. They're going to take all that energy and all that stupidity and do something that gives them excitement. Gives them excitement. Of course, they're cowards. 9 out of 10 of them kill themselves after they commit a heinous act. But that's excitement too. And the people around them, oh, gee, it was so quiet. Well, there's the first sign of trouble. Healthy people aren't quiet. They keep talking. They keep communicating. That's who it's going to be. Guy who lives alone at home with no role. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and I've got a phone number. It's 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. You're listening to Sterling every damn Sunday.
Yeah, I told the witch doctor tune in the Sterling Show. I told the witch doctor tune in the Sterling Show. And then the witch doctor told me where to go. He told me,
Hoo-ee, hoo-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Hoo-ee, hoo-ah-ah, Sterling every damn night. Hoo-ee, hoo-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Hoo-ee, hoo-ah-ah, Sterling every damn night.
All right, there we are, 10:37 on the East Coast, 7:37 on the West Coast. Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, welcome to the big show.
Thanks so much, Walter, for having me. And I have to say, it's kind of hard to follow your last segment because here I am talking about mirth and things to do with their free time in a casual environment, and we're facing such big tragedies. And when you put, I think you really put the nail on the head there when you describe the type of individual that could be the type of individual that would perpetrate this kind of story, this kind of tragedy, rather. And I think to myself, what is it, perhaps, do you think, what can we do as a society that would give this type of individual a sense of purpose in life that they don't feel that they are without that purpose? They need to validate themselves.
The job of a parent is to be the bumper on bumper cars. And a parent has shockingly little control of the outcome of their children. All they can do is make sure that the kid doesn't go off the edges. That's the bumper on a bumper car game. And many parents don't do that. The thing that most parents forget is kids know nothing. They're born knowing nothing. And they learn from us. And it's our job to say, there's the boundary. Don't cross that boundary. You don't have to be a jerk. You don't have to be a disciplinarian. You can make it into a joke. You can make it fun. But they need to know where the boundaries are. And as they go along, the other part of a parent's job, and it's something that the parents I know of who are really good, they spot strengths in that child as that child is growing up, things that they seem to be doing naturally and comfortably. And then you encourage it and you fan it. My 13-year-old loves to make ceramics. So once every Monday, we go to a ceramics teacher and she does ceramics. And it isn't going to result in a career in ceramics. What it's going to result in is self-confidence.
Mm. That's an excellent point of view. You pointed out something else that's great is that the relationship between these individuals and their parents is not that of a friend or a mentor in many cases, but sort of adversarial, or in the case of, like you said, what was it, a 6-year-old or a 9-year-old relationship between a parent? I think that's certainly true, too. So sometimes we have situations in this country because of the culture that we have now where a lot of individuals have only one parent or no parents or parents that have abandoned them. So there are a lot of situations like that where people have not had the guidance they have needed. And I think parenting is absolutely the number one aspect that really can form better humans if it is done and applied. But there are many cases where we see every day that parents are not engaged.
A single person can raise a child just fine. Easier with two, but a single parent who's present and accounted for can raise a child just fine. But no parent, single or with a partner, can raise a kid if they're drunk. And that is the biggest barrier between a successful child and a failing child. Is, you know, the parent can be in the living room, but they can't be passed out on the sofa. Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, tell me about the movie you don't like.
Actually, I found this to be quite a good and interesting movie. I just didn't know what the audience could be, except there is clearly an audience because it's Japanese animation, and anime movies have a following that is pretty sensational, not only with young people, but this is a global sensation. People from Cuernavaca, Mexico to Istanbul still have, and even Somalia, should I bring that up? Somalia are interested in Japanese anime, and this is a very interesting one. It's called Scarlet, and this is written and directed by Mamoru Hosada, and the story is of a young princess in medieval Denmark who embarks on a quest to avenge the death of her father, who was a king in Denmark, died at the hands of her power-hungry uncle. So she comes to the realization she's failed in her mission to avenge her death, the death of the father, because she's been fatally wounded. Now, you may ask, how do you realize you've been fatally wounded? Well, she's awoken in a surreal world of the afterlife. She's dead, in which a young man from the future heals her, but also helps her to see a future without bitterness and rage. Of course, she's all hell-bent on rage to find out who you know, to avenge her father's death. And she tries to find all of her dead enemies in the underworld and her father's enemies and get them all and get to the brother, her uncle. And she finally reaches the uncle. And then, with all the things that she's learned in the underworld along the way, especially from the guidance of this man from the future, a guy who looks like a paramedic, not someone from ancient Denmark, actually wearing a paramedic's outfit, the influence this person's had, will she now kill the uncle or not? So that's something she has to deal with. So these are very sophisticated ideas that you wouldn't normally think of in an animated cartoon for children. It's more like a graphic novel, and it has ideas of morality, the afterlife, the narrow wall between the living and the dead. And of course, it's in Japanese in its original Toho version. Sony Pictures Classics has it out with English subtitles. Intelligently made, well crafted. I just wonder, this is one of the big movies opening this weekend. It's not a blockbuster for the weekend that would have Brad Pitt, like F1, that people will rush out to see. So I'm wondering what the audience truly is, other than those diehard fans. But as a movie on its own, it was fascinating, and one I wouldn't see but for the fact that I do this as a career, a vocation, and a job. So the name of the movie is Scarlet, and it's Japanese animation, and it was really quite profound and beautifully animated. The backgrounds are gorgeous. It's stunningly visual. And not something I thought I would like, but I thought it was actually well produced.
Beloved community leaders, killers found. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, find out what happened to the Brooklyn dirtbag accused of spitting in women's faces. Coming up in moments on Sterling. Every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here, soon to be starring on stage together in Love Letters.
It's been a long time since we've been on stage together, babe, but we'll do the best we can.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
We've totally gone nuts. Details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Let's build some space under my
I want to sleep in the same bed as you. That's all. Maybe I could rest my head on your arm. I don't care. As long as you're there. You can see me without makeup, ready for bed in the late hour. I can see your hair, still wet from the shower. I want to sleep in the same bed as you. I guess I just want the little things.
To you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling every damn night. Oi, 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 oi.
All right, good evening, Walter. I'm Sterling, always having to deal with technical issues. I shouldn't have to deal with any technical issues. Nobody should ever say to me, are you on Access 13? Are you on Access 3? No, no one should ever ask me those questions. That's how we connect from my laundry room to the big radio station. Nobody should ever ask me those questions. Do you know why? Because do you know, understand what I have to do? I have to talk for 3 hours without a script and be vaguely interesting. Now, granted, it's Sunday night. You're drunk. Your tolerance is much greater for weirdness and terrible broadcasting. But there are few. There are few radio people who have no lives, no sex life. No money. They listen and they go, you know, they make professional judgment. And then they'll go on bulletin boards, blogs, vlogs, whatever you want to call them, and make notes. They'll share their deep thoughts. This is the worst thing I ever heard. This is horrible. Count on me to deliver that for you. I'm Walter Sterling. Good evening. And look at this. Have you even gotten close to dealing with the all the holiday gifts that you think you need to get? Are you? All right, I'm going to do something here. This is not a commercial. Nobody's paying for this. I'm going to share with you a suggestion that will immediately be viewed with suspicion. You ready? You go to MyPillow. No, it's not a commercial. You go to MyPillow, and you will be stunned at all the stuff they have way beyond the pillow. The blankets are great. the coffee is the best coffee you could ever imagine. What? MyPillow coffee? Yes. There are a lot of little tchotchkes, and now they're so cheap, and they'll be delivered on time, and they'll be delivered in a way you didn't anticipate. They're beautifully packaged. All the MyPillow stuff, I figured it'd be, you know, nice stuff, miserably packaged. No, it's nice stuff, really well packaged, and that I didn't expect. That I didn't expect. Nor did I expect Mike Lindell to run for governor.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
Yeah, he's running for governor of, what is it, Minnesota? Yeah, he wants to be governor of Minnesota against that Walls guy. And the reason you want to get rid of that Walls guy is his wife. That's the most terrifying woman I've seen in decades. The Walls guy, misguided, kind of sad, probably a C student. But the wife...
I'm not going to sit and hold this all day.
...is unbelievable. Like, what? How? She gave those speeches at the convention, and each time she spoke, 1,000 votes were lost.
This is a frivolous case, and if you're representing this guy and you've read this case, you are a disgusting lawyer.
I don't understand what Mike Lindell did that caused so much interest in federal courts. He wasn't interfering with elections before. He was just interfering with he was allegedly interfering with the results, questioning the results of the election. Is that right? I don't care about any of this stuff. This isn't what I normally talk about. Hi, are you a new listener? I don't usually talk about the Lindells and the voting because I have a life. I have young children. There's water in my basement sometimes. There are check engine lights on my car sometimes. I live that life. Only people who are really old or really rich and have free time have time to read the editorial page of the newspaper or have time to study, you know, the problems at MSNBC. Okay, those are really, I don't know who they are. But when I heard about Mike Lindell being in trouble, I'm like, what? How is that possible? Mike Lindell did something you and I wished we could do. He came up with an idea and built a multi-million dollar company from his singular idea. He made a better pillow, which is a damn smart thing to make because everybody needs a pillow. He made a better pillow. That's fantastic. And then he questioned the election. Oh, no, no, no. I thought the point of being an American and living in our country, a constitutional republic, see, I got that right, was that we question everything. We have the freedom to question everything. I don't know what he did. I don't know why it got into court, and I don't care. What I do know is that he built a company with a singular idea, a product that delivers what it says, beautifully packaged and shipped, and he had a private jet. He had what? Yes, he had a private jet.
There's a $5 million prize for anybody that can prove the election data that I have from the 2020 election is false.
See? He's willing to give a prize if anybody can prove that the election data he has is false. Now, there's a solid guy. I would urge you to go to MyPillow, go to MyPillow.com, and buy anything just to show support for him and use the promo code Walter, and then you get the deepest discount allowed by law. You will get the maximum discount allowed by law if you do it that way. And I will get credit for my hard work, and you will get the full discount that you deserve. I don't really think there's a better deal. How do you feel about this, Mr. Lindell?
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
My phone number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. When I was a kid, when you were a kid, there were Christmas gifts that your mother was not going to let you have. My mother would never let me have anything that could stick to the rug. We had obligatory wall-to-wall carpet in our homes. And, you know, by law, we had to have wall-to-wall carpet. I grew up in New Jersey. But if anything could possibly live in that carpet, anything could stick to that carpet, we were not getting it. That left out all of the toys in the putty category. Anything that involved putty, Play-Doh, that wasn't coming into our house. But there was another category. There was another item that she wasn't letting in. And I never understood why she didn't. Do you remember? Window Wonder, which was a clever idea that enabled you to draw on your windows, to paint on your windows, and have Christmas decorations on your window. All right, we're gonna discuss that more. Very important that we're going to be discussing that. Vic Ferrari, New York City retired police detective Vic Ferrari, will be here live coming up in just seconds. Yes, a New York City retired cop will be with you and me in just seconds, and he will answer all of our cop questions. That's coming up in just seconds, Sterling, every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. It's a live radio show, coast to coast.
Here's a story about Sydney Sweeney, who looks hot in an ad for some jeans. But then the usual suspects started complaining about what the ad actually means. They said it promotes white supremacy because Sydney was talking about her DNA. But all the normal people wished these pink-haired freaks would just all go away. Now American Eagle stock is soaring and Dunkin' Donuts.
Vic Ferrari is a retired New York City police detective, probably very happy that he's retired and not on the New York City force right now, but I digress. Just now, Vic Ferrari, a terrible story came out of Los Angeles. Did you just hear this story?
Are you talking about with Rob Reiner?
Rob Reiner and his wife, apparently, it's his house, they know that for sure. It's apparently him and his wife were stabbed in their home. So my question, Vic Ferrari, is when this happens, take us into being a cop. What are the steps the detectives and the patrolmen take at this moment to secure the area and determine who did it?
Yeah, well, the responding cops probably found them, called for paramedics if there was any sign of life. Once they determine that they're deceased, they back off. They make sure that no one's in the premise, and they wait for the detective to arrive. And, of course, they'll have something like a CSI or crime scene unit that'll start gathering evidence. And when someone is murdered in the house, the first thing they're going to look for is, was there forced entry? Is a window broken? Was the door jimmy? Does it look like the door was kicked in? If not, and it looks like that the person was let in, then they're going to start looking at, it's probably somebody close, like family or a business partner or someone that knew them that would let them in with no problem.
And then when they decide that it's somebody they might know or not know, how do they go down the list? Who do you like most when it's a related friend or a relative in a murder situation? Who does it tend to turn out to be?
It's usually family or someone that was married to your family, or it's usually someone that you're going to let in. You're going to feel comfortable that you would turn your back on that person. And from what I'm hearing and from what I've read, he has three adult children, one of which has had struggles with drugs and alcohol. And I'm not, you know, casting aspersions on this person, but the police are going to start interviewing his family, and I'm sure that's going to come up.
Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective. We're talking about the apparent murder of Rob Reiner, director, actor from All in the Family. Remember, Rob Reiner and his wife were apparently stabbed to death in their home. Do you find it unusual, if it is a family member or a relative, that they would use a knife?
No, usually when someone uses a knife, that it's up close and very personal. Now, obviously, maybe someone couldn't have gotten a hand on a gun, but usually with a knife, it's up close and personal, and there's a lot of anger.
A lot of anger. All right, this is Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective, and I'm going to ask you a question that I never hear being asked of retired cops and retired detectives. Vic, what do you miss most about being a detective? What do you miss most about that job?
Oh, I miss the camaraderies with my coworkers. I miss the action. I miss the car chases. I miss making arrests. It's a different skill set that I don't get to use now. I mean, I got into writing, but I just miss working on cases and trying to catch the bad guy.
How many car chases were you in?
Probably well over 100. And that's the dirty little secret, the NYPD. We're not allowed to get involved in car chases for stolen cars. Did we do it? Yeah, all the time.
But I can imagine that a car chase in New York City is a special hell.
You got to be a good driver, Walt, to not hit anything.
Well, now that you live in Florida, you must be disappointed on a daily basis, being surrounded by people who don't know how to drive at all.
Oh, my God. Your lips to God, dears. You're 100% right about that.
I lived in Fort Lauderdale for a year, and the thing that always amazed me is the most heinous car driving possible was they all back out of their driveway regardless of who's on the road. They're going to back out of their driveway now, and it doesn't matter if you're 10 feet away. That was the one thing I saw. I'm like, they're not even going to bother to look and see if anybody's around.
No, there's a lot of old people down here with four-door white vehicles, you know, the old Cadillacs and Lincolns, and yeah, they'll run you right over. You're basically a speed bump to them.
Yeah, and what was the other thing that always surprised me about how they drove? They don't look coming out, but there was one other thing. I'll think of it in a second. Now, Vic Ferrari, tell me about your latest book.
NYPD Behind the Blue Wall of Silence is about behind the scenes look at the New York City Police Department. A lot of things that people wouldn't believe.
Give me an example. What am I going to find in the book? Give me one example of an item I would not believe.
In the old days, the old timers wouldn't talk to the rookie cops, and I got an invite to a bachelor party. It was the first bachelor party I ever went to, and then I realized, yeah, because they want my $100 to attend this bachelor party. We get there, it's all old timers. There was actually a guy named Captain Hook who had Peyronie's disease, and three strippers showed up, and they were very statuesque, and then we quickly realized that they were men, and the best man had ordered the wrong strippers. A sergeant picked up a cold cut platter and threw it at them and told them to get the hell out. And then what wound up happening is the best man said, you know, the funny thing is I ordered four strippers and only three showed up. And then we realized one of our coworkers was missing, and we found him in a car with the stripper servicing him. So we all ponied up $5 and gave him a tip.
Well, it was very nice of you to give him a tip. That was terrific. Here's Vic Ferrari. He's on our show almost every night, and I have to say, I've been meaning to say this because I've just, you know, when you have a 13-year-old, you get easily distracted. Well, here's the deal, Vic. You do great reports. You share with us terrific New York City police detective stories. You'd have to go to a cop bar to hear these stories, but they wouldn't tell them in front of you. But Vic tells it here. I am grateful for what you do for this show. I hope you sell a ton of books. How do I buy your book?
Sure. Just go to Amazon and type in my name, Vic Ferrari Like the Car, where you can preview all my NYPD books for free.
Your Amazon store is really well done. Graphically appealing, easy to move around. I would urge you, my friend, my Midnight Misfit, to go to Vic Ferrari's store on Amazon and buy a book. Nobody's going to get mad at you if you give them a Vic Ferrari book. I think that's a fair statement there, Vic.
Absolutely. They're only $10 a piece, paperback.
Paperback, $10 a piece, terrific stocking stuffer, terrific Christmas gift. Vic Ferrari, Merry Christmas, and thank you for being part of Sterling every damn night.
Stirling every night, the carbon is alive. Neon lights flicker, the patrons talking jive. Bullets over trailer parks under the moonlight sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets his guy.
Hey, Walter, on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, Anthony Keynes, the sicko busted by the NYPD for allegedly spitting in the faces of white women who passed him in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, has apparently been on the receiving end of some good old-fashioned street justice. Video footage shared on social media showed two men beating and kicking a man who appeared to be the accused spitter, Keynes, 45 years old, outside of a hair salon on 6th Street. Keynes, curled up on a sidewalk in a defensive fetal position, is dealt multiple blows by two attackers whose faces are never shown. The two men laugh to themselves as they kick Keynes and stomped his legs. Keynes is heard wailing in pain during the beatdown. The clip quickly cuts to images of Keynes with a large gash on his forehead above his left eye. Blood streams down his face as the men issue a final warning. Stop violating these females out here, you heard, the man filming the video told him. We're tired of this crap, the man explains. You're making us look bad. Claims appeared to confirm he understood before saying, I went to jail for that, didn't I? F jail. We're worse than jail, the man yells before delivering one final bolo to the head. Keynes was arrested on November 13th for his serial spitting spree. He was released with an ankle monitor the following day after pleading not guilty to charges, including aggravated harassment based on race or religion, according to court documents obtained by the Post. The Brooklyn District Attorney's Office is still interested in speaking to any additional victims who have yet to come forward. The NYPD did not receive a report about the assault on Keynes. Well, here's a guy that's running around spitting in women's faces. He did it one too many times. He probably got the popularity he thought was cool. Someone recognized him, knew him from the neighborhood, and said, all right, he's going to rear his ugly head at some point, and then they're going to give him a good old-fashioned tune-up. This kind of sounds like the Dave Chappelle show when the late Charlie Murphy was telling the story about how Rick James came into Eddie Murphy's house with his muddy boots and started ruining his couch. So Eddie Murphy and Charlie Murphy held him down and whooped his butt. And that's kind of what it sounds like. And this guy is smart enough to know if he goes to the cops and these guys get arrested, there's probably more people waiting out there to give him a beating. So hopefully he'll take this and say, you know what? This is enough for me to knock it off, because I think if this guy keeps spitting in people's faces, someone's brother, father, boyfriend, whatever, he's going to wind up in a ditch somewhere. As a retired member of law enforcement, I don't advocate vigilantes. I think it's wrong, but something's got to happen where you have a DA's office that's not holding this guy's feet to the fire and putting him in jail. So people took matters into their own hands. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Behind the Blue Wall of Silence.
Peel the dough, eat the dough, J.B. Bakery, Salida and Steve.
All right, here's Steve, the owner of J.B. Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey, and Selena, the person who actually runs the bakery, and Father Jim Drucker, the greeter at the bakery. Father Jim Drucker is an actual Catholic priest, and he was a captain in the Air Force, an actual captain in the Air Force, and now he's a greeter at J.B. Bakery. But I gave you folks a marketing tip that I see was completely ignored. On Facebook, and other places where there are photos and videos of J.B. Bakery, in Burlington, New Jersey, I said, well, if you want people to actually pay attention to your social media, let's do the common sense thing. Let's do what they do at Mariella Pizza in New Jersey. They have the daughter on, and she makes the pizza. The old man, the parents, they're not on the cameras. She just makes the pizza. Now she has like 43 million followers. Selena is still not holding up the donuts. And she's still not holding up the baked goods. Instead, we keep seeing Steve. Steve, you're only an attractive member of this trio when people are eating your food. But you have to get them to eat your food, and Selena can do that better.
Walter, you must be watching reruns because I've been out plowing snow all day long trying to clear out the bakery for my customers. So they must have been reruns.
I see you holding up cream-filled donuts with white icing.
The eggnog donuts.
Oh,
I actually just wrapped up a live stream, Walter. I was on a live stream for maybe over an hour decorating gingerbread cookies. I'm here at the bakery right now. Just finished it up, and I was showing off all of our holiday goodies. And I did have quite a few people watching. And I have to say, you're right, because, you know, Steve, when he does live streams, he never gets any comments on his. But I had everybody commenting. We were having a great time, and lots of people liked it and interacted with us.
But I have to tell you, Walter, I must tell you that she's joined the ranks of the cookie monsters. While she's decorating these hundreds of gingerbread cookies, Walter, she had the audacity to bite the head off of one of the gingerbread cookies, Walter.
Well, this could be traumatic to any small children watching. I think you'll agree.
Parental guidance is suggested.
Now, Selena, how did you feel now that you've taken this next step in marketing by going on a live stream? Was this on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook?
It was on Instagram, and I think it might link it to Facebook as well. And it went really well. The only thing with TikTok is I don't think they let you stream unless you have a certain amount of followers and, like, view time. They have a lot more restrictions, but anybody can go live on Instagram. So it was great, and a lot of people watched it, and it was a fun time. And, you know, even though I did eat the head off of it, I have to say I did try to save it first. The head already was broken off. I tried to glue it back together, but listen, I mean, I had to taste test it. I can't sell people cookies that aren't good.
I think you can go on TikTok. I don't think you need a view count to start a live stream. In fact, I'm sure you don't need a view count. I think this is your next step. You want to go on TikTok to do it. But think about it. Nobody would ever start a live stream if they had a minimum count.
That's true. I'll have to look into it. I mean, that's just what I
but
saw
I'm
on
delighted
TikTok
you
that
did,
I have.
Yeah, I'm delighted you did this. So there was a live stream on Instagram of Selena from JB Bakery. What is your Instagram name? How do I find you?
It's JB Burlington Baking.
Say it again.
JB Burlington Baking.
JB Burlington Baking. JB Burlington Baking Radio three times. JB Burlington Baking. Well, that'll be fun. How often are you going to do it? Every other day? Good idea.
I think so. I've got more fun things planned. We're going to be making some gift boxes with some goodies to have in the store if you need a hostess gift or something. So I'll be assembling those on a live soon, probably decorating a lot more cookies, and also our eggnog donuts, which are our featured donut right now.
What sells best at Christmas?
Honestly, I mean, besides cookies, which is kind of an obvious one, people do like the different things like the eggnog donut, the hot chocolate donut, but also the cupcakes. We've got cupcakes that are decorated like snowmen, like Christmas trees, and like Santa hats. And people like to bring something different that's just fun and colorful for the table.
Now, it's a stressful time of the year emotionally for many people who are weak. Is there a lot of stress within the bakery, or are there fights with the personnel at the bakery?
Well, we usually solve that by just eating sugar. I mean, there's nothing that can't be solved by stress eating.
Well, absolutely true. That's Selena of JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. Steve, who's a brilliant baker, and you want to try his stuff and look for them on Facebook. Sign up and follow them on Facebook. JB Bakery. And there's the great Father Jim Drucker, the only man in America who drives 400 miles to get a new set of tires. He's got to go to Claiborne in Kent, Ohio, to get his tires.
No, in Warren, Ohio, Walter, Warren.
And he doesn't seem to realize that driving 800 miles could cause wear and tear on the tires. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Cop to you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling every damn night. Oi,
right.
Oi, oi, oi.
Happy Hanukkah, peaceful Hanukkah to you. Rob Reiner, the actor, All in the Family, director, When Harry Met Sally, and his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner, were found dead in their Los Angeles home today. Authorities responded to a medical aid call around 3:30 p.m. and discovered their bodies. Multiple sources tell People, I'm getting this out of People magazine, that the killer was the couple's son, Nick Reiner. Nick Reiner previously spoke publicly about his long battle with drug addiction and periods of homelessness. Rob and his wife were killed by their son, Nick. They were stabbed to death. I don't know what the relationship was between the Reiners and their son, Nick, but they were not having a relationship between them and their son, Nick. They were having their relationship with a drug addict. A drug addict. The minute your kid takes drugs, the minute you take drugs, the minute you have three drinks, you are not you. You are controlled by that external substance that you have chosen to put into your body. To talk to somebody who is an addict and try to reason with them is the biggest waste of time you could ever indulge. There is no logic to sticking a needle in, snorting some poison up your nose, pouring gallons of crap into your body. There's no logic to doing that, and therefore trying to use logic and intellectualism to convince somebody rational recovery. Biggest joke. Rational recovery? No, there is no rational recovery, because there's nothing rational about taking an illegal or poisonous substance and pouring it into your body to the extent where you are no longer you. This is where parents and loved ones screw up. If a person is not an addict, if a person has never lived any part of their lives as an addict, it is impossible for them to relate to somebody who is an addict. It's impossible. Because someone who is not an addict is going to try to reason with them, share with them information about the bad things about being an addict, the bad things about taking these drugs or dealing with people on the street and da, 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 da. You're wasting your time. The minute that drug hits them, an addict, that has addict circuitry, the minute somebody who has addict circuitry gets their fix, they're gone. There's no way to reason with them. All they want is the next hit. All they want is the next escape. All they want is to, listen to me, all they want is to escape from the feelings they have when they're not high. All they want is to escape from the feelings that they have when they're not drunk. That's all they want. You can talk all you want. You can promise them a new car, $1,000, a lottery ticket, sex. You can promise them anything you want and deliver it, and it will not change it. Now, here's this Nick Reiner, who went in and allegedly killed his parents with a knife, close up and personal. We had Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective, on moments ago. And Vic Ferrari said, he said, well, if it's a knife, if somebody was killed with a knife, that's personal. That tends to be a relative, tends to be a loved one, gets up close and gets in their face and wants to kill them. And they want it to be very clear who is killing them. In my opinion, one of the biggest mistakes, and this Nick Reiner, whose parents were multimillionaires, he was homeless. There were times in his life where he was homeless. Well, the only reason Nick Reiner would be homeless is because his parents wouldn't let him in. They viewed that he was dangerous. That's a good reason not to let somebody in your house. But let's say it wasn't because he was dangerous. Let's imagine for a second that Nick Reiner needed to learn a lesson. Well, you keep getting high and stoned and you're coming in here and we can't have it anymore and you're 35 years old. We're not letting you in again. And we're going to change the locks. And they, in effect, forced the kid to sleep outside, to live outside, nice in L.A., better than in much of the country. All that's going to do is make the kid befriend drug dealers, get closer to the drug community, get closer to the derelict community. It isn't going to get them clean. They don't want to live outside. They don't need to be living outside to know that that's a bad idea. That's not what's going to get them to give up drugs or booze. That isn't what's going to do it. It never does it. That would get you sober. That would get you off drugs. You would get off drugs if somebody said, you can't come home anymore, you're going to have to live in the street. Oh, live in the street. I'm not going to live in the street. I'm getting, I'm coming in, I'm getting clean, no problem. What can I scrub first? I'm going to get clean, then I'm going to scrub your floors, I'm going to iron the clothes. I will never do drugs again. That's what you would do because you're not an addict. But the minute an addict snorts, needles, drinks, they're gone. They are slaves to that drug. Complete, absolute slaves. And no amount of reasoning, sanity, brochures, chats with the priest, chats with grandma, none of that is going to get them clean and sober. None of it. Unless they're threatening you with violence, I would suggest you let that kid live in your house. And they will get clean and sober when they can. When they have had a moment of clarity, their own moment of clarity, where they go, oh my gosh, what have I done? No number of speeches from you are going to get that kid clean and sober. That isn't going to happen. I can just imagine all the speeches Rob Reiner, Meathead, gave his son Nick over the years to try to get him clean and sober. I can imagine all the rehabs that they sent him to, all the rehabs they paid for, all of the outreach that they did, all the interventions. I can imagine it. But the problem is that the Reiners, and no, they didn't, nobody deserves this, but the problem is that the Reiners are not addicts. And therefore, they always kept going at it, as any parent would, from a position of intellect and love. We love you. Now, let me share some information with you about these drugs you're taking. Wouldn't hear a thing. No addict would hear another word after that. Not another word. The only way an addict gets clean and the only way an alcoholic gets sober is by talking to recovered alcoholics or recovered drug addicts. They are the only ones who know the magic words. Rob Reiner and his wife murdered today in Brentwood, California, found dead in their home, stabbed, allegedly, by their son, Nick. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
So we're here usually telling you stories about living with our 8 kids in our very old house, but today something a little different. You and I are back on stage together.
Or at least we hope to be. I mean, the show is scheduled. We do have our scripts. We have done our little read-through together in a local restaurant in which we cried our little eyeballs out when we got to the end of the play. And that is the plan for Valentine's Day weekend.
You used to do a lot of stage work. I did a little bit. We appeared together when we were first dating.
Right. So I was just thinking about that. And I do believe it has been 27 years since you and I performed together, actually performed on stage together. And that kind of corresponds with a certain amount of children. Like at one point, one of us couldn't be on the stage with the other. And then at about kid number 4, I decided that I could either do a really great job on stage or a mediocre job on stage and a mediocre job at home. and I took a break, a very long break, and now it has been 20 years since I've been in a stage production.
So, Valentine's Weekend 2026, on stage, in a real theater, Love Letters, starring Dan and Becky Gaffney.
Okay,
or I should say, Becky and Dan.
Yeah,
Gaffney.
That's the way we should bill it always. But you sound like you're doing a commercial now. Because
I am. I'm getting ready to give the website for
tickets. You're hilarious. Because you don't want me to feel bad if no tickets sell, because I haven't been on stage for so long. But really, it was a chosen hiatus that I didn't think would last this long. But, you know, it would never fail that when people around here were starting their seasons, they would always come to me. Are you going to audition? Are you going to do this? You know, would you at least come for this show? And I have just never felt like, I always miss the stage and I want to be back there, because that's honestly from the time I was, I don't know, walking, mm-hmm. where I thought that I would end up and what I thought that I would do with the rest of my life. But I've never felt like I was in the right place to go back and to perform. And honestly, this is kind of an easy way to transition, because if you're not familiar with Love Letters, it's a show that you don't really have to memorize. Yeah. I can't fail.
It's reading letters, so you don't have to memorize the script.
Right.
You have to be familiar with it, of course, but it's all reading.
It is. It's two people. It's reader's theater, and you sit there and read the letters, the cards that all of these people sent back and forth to each other from the time they were children until the end of their lives.
Which is the only way, that kind of theater, the only way I could keep up with you, dear.
So by reading?
I might
be kicking you under the love letters table when you go a little bit too far and you turn into a cartoon character.
Sterling listeners ought to take a trip to the beaches of Delaware on Valentine's Day and visit Dickens Parlor Theater.
You really are doing a commercial.
Yes,
you're
DickensParlorTheater.com to get tickets to see us in Love Letters.
And to see if we fall flat on our face or directly into our notebooks and pens.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
It's Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Happy Hanukkah to you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling every damn night.
Oy, all right, oy, it's a live radio show, coast to coast, Walter M. Sterling, live. And that's why I get to share this horrible news. Legendary director Rob Reiner and his longtime wife have been found stabbed to death inside their Brentwood, California home. Investigators are eyeing the couple's troubled adult son, Nick, as a person of interest. Officers were called to the home this afternoon, where they discovered a man and a woman with stab wounds, according to cops and other sources. The Los Angeles Fire Department told NBC News that a 78-year-old man and a 68-year-old woman were found dead inside the home. The ages matched those of Reiner and his wife, Michelle. And Post sources confirmed the bodies discovered were the longtime couple, who married in 1989. The couple's 32-year-old son and screenwriter Nick Reiner is a person of interest in the deadly stabbing. I hope that turns out to not be true, but I'd much rather it turn out that they weren't dead. Now, Nick, the son, has been open about his issues battling drug addiction and homelessness. I was homeless in Maine. I was homeless in New Jersey. I was homeless in Texas. I spent nights on the street. I spent weeks on the street. It was not fun, he told People magazine. The paramedics rushed to the home around 3:30. Officers with the LAPD responded to the home following reports of an ambulance death investigation. The detectives were also at the scene. A spokesperson for the department said a knife is believed to have been used in the attack. Our Vic Ferrari, police detective, retired New York City police detective, says that if it's a knife, it's most likely a family member. It's personal. They wanted to get right up to them. They were angry at them, and they wanted to be very clear who was angry at them and why. They wanted the person who suffered at their hands to understand why they were being killed. And they felt that a knife does that best. If it was their son who has suffered with homelessness and drug addiction, my message, especially at the holiday, is that if you have a kid who, unless they're violent, if you want to teach them a lesson about drugs and alcohol and being an addict, you want to teach them a lesson, do not make them homeless. You are suddenly increasing their likelihood of being killed dramatically. They're going to get more drugs, worse drugs. They're not going to hang out with country club people. They're going to hang out with worse and worse people all the time. It does not teach them a lesson. An addict is not taught a lesson by being made homeless. You are. If you were made homeless, it'd be a lesson for you. Oh, I'm not. That's never going to happen again. I'm not going to spend another night on the curb. And you wouldn't. But if you're an addict and it got you closer to the drugs, to your dealer, to your drug community, well, that's not so bad. I'll just live out here in the street because I'll be closer to my drugs and more people will offer them to me and I can find more ways to earn them. That's what happens to an addict who's been made homeless. That's how it works. Don't do that. That's your kid. You love that kid. And unless you feel unsafe with that child in your home, you don't make them homeless. You keep them in your home. And you make it possible for them to talk to recovered addicts and alcoholics, because only recovered addicts and alcoholics know what to say to an acting addict. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
I think the solution to the dilemma of tipping is that tipping should be against federal law.
Sterling every night, lost in space, mission control, and it's not.
There's Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio, a prominent Canadian show. You can hear every episode of Spaced Out Radio on YouTube. Search Spaced Out Radio. Go to his website, Spaced Out Radio, and that's where you can buy what you need most right now, which is stocking stuffers. You need Christmas gifts now. You need to go to the website now and order them right now, including the T-shirt that features me, Walter Sterling. In a UFO. Isn't that fantastic? Dave Scott, welcome to the Giant Network Radio Show.
Thank you, number one. It is always a pleasure to share the airwaves with you. And I was listening a little bit earlier before where you seemed to have a pet peeve with tipping.
Yes, I think the solution, at this time of year, shows like this ask the listener, who should get tipped? How much should you tip? Do you tip the garbage man? Do you tip the person at the laundry, at your dry cleaner? Who do you tip and who don't you tip? And then it just hit me now. I'm like, the answer is to, you know, forget about not taxing tips. Make tipping illegal.
I think in some industries it's worthy, but you know what bugs me is in our community there's a big uproar because at Subway they're hitting you up for tips now.
Yes. Here. Any place where you have to tap one of those white pads, one of those iPads to do the tipping, it's even worse. But finish what you were saying, then I will contribute.
Well,
to this.
What bugs me about it is the owner here of the Subway has been caught that the tips don't even go to his workers. Mm. He puts them in his pocket.
Let's see, is that illegal? That's not illegal. See, that's the other part of the problem.
No, it's not illegal. It's not illegal. But it's rude.
It's tacky.
It's rude.
It's really tacky.
It's tacky. Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you something even tackier. Let's say you're on a cruise ship, which I never recommend. You ever been on a cruise ship?
Nope, don't like the ocean.
No, you'd like it less on a cruise ship. When all they show you all the ads for cruise ships and all the beautiful photographs, never do they mention, by the way, the ship keeps moving. It's always moving. And you may not like the way it's moving. It may not be working out for you. Well, here's how the tipping works on most cruise ships. A person gets a salary on a cruise ship. They get a guaranteed amount of money. And then you figure, okay, they're going to get $15 an hour guaranteed. And if I give this person $10 for helping me and $10 here and there, they're going to get $15 an hour plus the $10. No. The tips go to paying the base salary. And only when the tipping goes above the base salaries do they get any extra money. So the tips actually pay them 100% of their wages. And then maybe if there's some left over, they'll get a little more. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's the worst thing I ever heard. That means that those ships are payrolling most of their staff for free.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely.
Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely. There's always a way around it, right?
Always a way around it. Now, Dave Scott and I were talking about a very important story this week. One of his personal encounters with aliens. And it was dramatic, and it was big, and I'd like you to restart that story. Share with us a little bit of what you already told us, and then a little more.
Well, in 2014, in the month of April, on the 10th and then the 15th, I had two very, very incredible encounters, one with a UFO that called me outside of a friend's house and was communicating with me by turning its lights off and on my command. As silly as that sounds, it still baffles me to this day, and I'm the one who lived it. Then 5 days later, I met a young lady named Samantha Mowat. We were at the farm where this happened in the backwoods of Mission, British Columbia. Followed that up with Samantha asking me to take her to where I saw the UFO. So I took her out to the back field, showed her where the UFO was sitting and communicating with me. When she said, "Let's go into the forest." And I'd known this young lady about 25 minutes, and next thing I know, we're staring at an extraterrestrial standing in the forest about 200 feet away from us. And that's kind of where we continue the story tonight, is we came out of the forest. We were greeted by our four dogs that were there. And as we were walking back towards the house, Walter, Samantha says to me, "Dave, have you ever been taken before?" I said, "Taken how?" She goes, "By any ETs." And I said, "Nope." She goes, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Not that I know of. I don't have any recollection or anything." And she goes, interesting. She goes, "Well, there's a good chance that it's going to happen now that we've had contact. But don't be afraid. Whatever they do to you, it doesn't hurt. And they'll take you right back to your home, and you got nothing to worry about." Now, the weird part about that part of the conversation is for about 5 years after this incident, Samantha had no recall on that exact statement. But little did I know, Walter, how right she was. Because 4 months later, 5 months later, in September, on the 30th of 2014, I got taken. And that was the first time that I knew that I had been taken. I went to bed, and just like I would any normal night, next thing I know, I wake up, and I can feel metal on my body. And I picked my head up. My face is like, you know when you're in a massage table and you got those little donuts that you put your head down in so you can breathe?
Yeah, yes.
You know, those little donut pillows? So that's where I am. I am in a donut pebble or pillow on this metal table, and I pick my head up, and I know there's light behind me. And I turn my head to the right, and it's all dark. But when I turn my head to the left, that's where I saw things that I never thought I would see. There were three little gray beings standing there, and they had on these blackish silver body suits. And on their body suits, they were kind of sparkly. Okay, they had tiny hands, three fingers, one thumb on each hand. Their heads were big with the big black eyes, and the light was kind of beaming off of there. And all of a sudden, I felt like, oh, my God, I've been taken. Samantha said I was going to be taken. This is way too real, way too real. And so I put my face back down, wondering, what the hell are they going to do to me? That's when I felt the first one come up towards my shoulder, my left shoulder, and he started putting his hands, rubbing his hands through my beautiful hair. And I have beautiful hair, Walter. I really do. Okay. The second guy, all of a sudden I felt his presence kind of move beside the other one. And that's where I felt a knife go into my, cutting my skin straight across on the back of my head. And I remember thinking, oh, this hurts, man. This really, really hurts. And I thought, nope, Samantha, I'm just going to let it happen. That's what Samantha said to do. Okay, so I'm going to let it happen. And then the guy who, the one who was over my left shoulder, the original first one that walked up to me, I felt his little fingers grab that slice of skin. And that cut felt like it was probably an inch and a half, 2 inches long. And he starts pulling back on it towards my forehead. And I remember thinking, this doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good at all. And I'm holding back from screaming. And that's when I heard the saw. And I felt them cutting open the back of my skull. And Walter, God is my witness. I swear in a Bible, my children's lives, whatever, that this story is true.
I believe you.
I started screaming when this saw started cutting.
Yes.
And I all of a sudden heard Samantha's voice in my head say to me, Dave, don't worry. It doesn't hurt. It's okay. And all of a sudden, as soon as I heard her voice say that, everything started to tickle. And I started to laugh. And I could feel them, after the saw went away, them trying to lift up part of my skull that they just cut into, and they were trying to shove something in there. I don't know what. Many people in the UFO community would call it an implant. That's the word I'm looking for, an implant. And all of a sudden, this is where the story gets funny. And I said this to
I think the story's been funny up till now. I mean, the minute they were sawing into your skull, that's quite a story.
Yes, I know. But here's where it gets kind of hilarious, though. And I've told a couple of people who are much more advanced on alien abductions than I am. When I tell this story, they said, Dave, you know how we know it's true? I said, how? They said, because nobody would make this stupidity up. Okay. All of a sudden, Walter, I had to go to the bathroom. I had to pee. Real bad. Real, real bad. You know, like when you have, you're trying to hold off, you're out with your buddies out for beers when you're younger, and you're at the bar, and you know that you've drank so much that the minute you run to the bathroom, you're going to be going like every 7 minutes after that.
Yeah.
You break the seal. And yeah. I start yelling through the donut at these guys. I said, guys, you better hurry up. I got to pee like anything, and I am going to let it go all over this table if you don't get me back home. I have to go to the bathroom. And I start screaming this at them. And all of a sudden, I think I startled them because they didn't expect me to be awake. Next thing I know, I wake up on top of my blanket, which I never sleep on top of my blanket. I never sleep on my stomach. And I'm laying on my stomach, and I get up, and I run to the bathroom. My head is feeling like I have just drank about 12 beers and about 12 tequilas, okay? And I run to the bathroom, and I take the greatest, greatest washroom break of my life while I'm holding my head. And my head had a bump on it for 3 days.
Did you go to a doctor?
No.
Dave's
and
got...
Let me tell you why, though, quickly. Yeah. They wouldn't believe me. They wouldn't believe me.
It's an incredible story. As more of it comes back to you, I want you to share it with us. And I look forward to talking to you some more tomorrow night. That's Dave Scott, Spaced Out Radio, and spacedoutradio.com. Did you want to say something else?
I just want to say thank you to everybody listening in. And go get your Walter M. Sterling Every Damn Night t-shirt at spacedoutradio.com.
Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Cop to you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling every damn night. Oy, 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 oy.
Yes. Welcome to the big show, the network show. It's a live show. This is a live show, coast to coast. That doesn't happen on Sunday nights, but I am here to be of service to you. My mom had some very specific guidelines about what gifts would be allowed in the house, what toys would be allowed in the house. And on her list of toys that would never be allowed in the house were things that would alter the health of objects in the home. She did not allow anything gooey, sticky, that could get stuck in the wall-to-wall carpet. If it could get stuck in the wall-to-wall carpet, it was not coming into our house. Silly putty never made its way into our home. Very sad about that. But there was something else she didn't allow in the home, which was, there was a product called Window Wonder. Window Wonder. And Window Wonder was a clever idea. It was a box of paper stencils of Christmas trees, ornaments, Christmas decoration, and a sponge. And what you were supposed to do was take the window cleaner. What the hell was it called? Window wax, something like that. And you would dip the sponge in it, and then through the stencil, you'd dab it on the window of your home, and then you'd remove the stencil, and then, oh my gosh, there was a Christmas tree.
Wonderful new idea for Christmas fun. Now you can turn your home into a window wonderland with the magic of glass wax and a set of these easy-to-use cut-out stencils for glass wax. Why, it's so easy a child can do it. Just pour regular glass wax into a dish, dip in a sponge, and simply dab over one of the stencil designs. Put a jolly Santa like this on your windows in a matter of seconds. Or Christmas trees, wreaths, Santa and his reindeer. All the lovely signs of Christmas that will make your home a window wonderland. All through the magic of glass wax and a set of these cut-out stencils for glass wax. Buy your set of Christmas stencils wherever you buy regular glass wax. Beautiful holiday designs to help make a window wonderland at your home this Christmas.
And then they said, in addition to using the glass wax, which was pink, you could put food coloring in the glass wax and make it different colors. Well, this is very exciting. I love this idea. This was not coming into my home. There was no way my mother was going to let. All she could see from glass wax being dabbed and used as art would be the destruction of her curtains, windowsills, windows. There was no way that was coming into our home. That was way too dangerous. It could cause permanent damage in her mind, like silly putty in the wall-to-wall carpet. That wasn't coming into the home. But I was fascinated by stencils. I was fascinated by glass wax. I thought, that is so cool. And then we could add food coloring into it, red food coloring into the pink glass wax, make it a rich ruby red. And you did it on the windows, but she just saw a mess. She did not see how a 9-year-old boy could neatly dab glass wax through a stencil onto her living room windows without making a big, smudgy mess that she would have to clean up. Therefore, that was not coming into our house. I think one year, when I, first started to live on my own, first or second year of my own apartment, I think I did buy it once to get it out of my system, to do it. It was less satisfying than I had hoped. The consistency of the glass wax on the glass was not as solid and consistent and dependable as I had hoped. But I bet your mom had certain toys that were not getting into your house. What were they? 85, my phone, I got a phone number. We'll talk live. We can talk live. It's a radio show. 855-839-1210. What did your mother not allow in the house? What toys were never getting into your house? Toys that involved water, sticking into the rug, and putting art on the windows of her living room. Those were not getting in our house. Never going to get in the house. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. That's my phone number. I'm live right now. We can talk right now. I want to know, what toys did your mother absolutely not allow in the house? And I have an email. It's WalterMSterling@gmail.com. And a website, waltersterlingshow.com. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Happy Hanukkah to you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling every damn night. Oy, 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 oy.
Good evening, Walter M. Sterling, live coast to coast from WGAN in Maine to KFBK Sacramento, all the big radio stations in between, KMBZ Kansas City, KDKA Pittsburgh, WPHT Philadelphia. You and I are midnight misfits. We don't fit in. Normal people do not listen to the radio at this time. Normal, boring people, day people, they're not going to work now. But you and I are at work now. And if you're in a break room, I would love to see a photo of your break room. In an 18-wheeler, let me see a photo, a picture of that dashboard glowing in the night sky. Send it to WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. And here's one of the great gifts of our time. Amanda Seyfried, who was in Mamma Mia. She was the daughter in Mamma Mia. Amanda Seyfried, beautiful woman, very blonde, very large breasts until she went on some stupid diet. There she is in some whack job set up public relations interview with Sydney Sweeney. And they both went on the lie detector. And what did Amanda Seyfried ask Sydney Sweeney? She'd asked exactly what you and I would ask. Are those breasts natural breasts? And Sydney said, yes, they are. And then Amanda said,
can I touch them?
Sure.
What?
Can I touch them?
Sure.
One more time.
Can I touch them?
Sure.
Can she touch them? Amanda Seyfried, who all by herself would be sexy enough, but then sitting next to Sydney Sweeney and her breasts, asked the question.
Can I touch them?
Sure.
Now, we didn't see what happened after that. That was pretty much the end of the interview, leaving it to our imaginations. It's great to live in America. I'm Walter Sterling, and my email is waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com, and I've got this really good website, normal, easy to navigate, waltersterlingshow.com. But my big tip to you tonight, solve your Christmas problems by going to MyPillow.com. Maybe cheesy to throw that in, but you will be shocked at how much cool stuff is at that website. MyPillow.com. Use the promo code Walter so I get credit and you get the discounts you deserve. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Club in San Francisco, their beloved boss, beloved and a community leader, because this guy did so much for the San Francisco Bay Area. And yeah, and he was Italian. His last name was Calcagni, I think. Yeah, Mark Calcagni. He was whacked in October outside of his home, and apparently was by a couple of his ungrateful employees. Yep, that's allegedly what's going on, because these people were dumb. They killed him outside a house where there's cameras everywhere. They also had their cell phones with them. And yeah, it's not a good thing whatsoever. The perps, Well, it's a sad tale. 43-year-old Richard Lund and his girlfriend, a dancer at the club, Asia Morton. She was 25, or is 25. Apparently, they had a beef with that 60-year-old leader of the community. Not only did our man, Mark Calcagni, manage the Condor Club, he also was a manager of other clubs in the area. His dedication, leadership, and passion over many years shaped who we are today, and we're devastated by this loss. Mark's memory, warmth, generosity, and commitment to our community will endure. We pledge to honor his legacy going forward. That's what this club says, and I believe him. Really good with the Meals on Wheels, sending the ladies out to the old people, hand over some food. And so the old people don't have to go out to eat. They can just throw it in the microwave and nuke her away. Asia Morton will be missed. Fine dancer. These folks are convicted. Likely they're going to be going to jail for some time. And definitely by then, Asia Morton will age out as being an exotic dancer. And that's sad because I think she had a lot of joy to bring to a lot of wonderful men, except for the one guy that she helped kill, allegedly. From the Champagne Room, thinking of community service, I'm Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. Oh, yeah!
The people of Walmart, Sterling every damn night.
Fort Smith, Arkansas. You think that would be a place with some common sense? But you would be wrong. Yeah, the Fort Smith Police Department, they've confirmed at least one person has been arrested after a child was found inside a vehicle parked at the Walmart Supercenter off Rogers Avenue, December 12th. Yeah, the Fort Smith Police Department says the child is stable. Yeah, stable. And they couldn't confirm the child's age or relationship to the person who was arrested. The Department of Human Services is reportedly assisting with the case. My mother would have gone to jail every week during my formative years. Primarily because, yeah, if we were misbehaving, we were sent to the car. And we were sent to the car to sit there alone. Nothing about bad weather. Nothing about it's like a baby that's been there for 30 minutes. No, it's just a kid. The kid could have been 12 for all we know. We've completely lost it. We're insane. You should be able to go into Walmart leaving your toddlers in the car. Maybe not toddlers, but, you know, perhaps the 7-year-old. Yeah, stay in the car a second. I'm running in to get some beer and milk duds. By the way, Walmart, largest corporation in the world, great selection of beer at most of its locations, and also wonderful confections like the Mighty Milk Dud. I love the Milk Dud. It's really, really tasty. Not great on the toofies, but really good. And your kids will like it too, unless they've been put into foster care because you left your 10-year-old in the car for 5 minutes as you ran in to pick up some provisions. I'm also sick of the Karens walking around on a perfectly fine day to leave your kid in the car. It's probably like 60 degrees in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Just looking in windows and seeing if they see a kid. You know, there's a Karen. She's got that haircut. Why do they all have that haircut? It's completely bonkers. Free grandma or the mother or the father or grandpa. Whoever let this kid in, return the kid home. Probably a perfectly fine situation. Stop being busybodies and start living. Because that's why I go to Walmart. For the people of Walmart, I'm Velo Hool. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. Study books, rusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Conquering the Skies. At their destination, Ash groped around for the doorknob and nudged the door open with his hip. It closed behind them, and he set her down on the floor and spun her around by the waist to face him. Dim wall sconces around the perimeter of the room cast him in a warm glow, highlighting the tender affection in his eyes. "If you'll indulge me in a rare, serious moment," he said, "you've made me the luckiest man in the universe today. No matter what happens from here on out, there's nothing the two of us can't handle together." Geneva caressed the side of his face. This was one of the, if not the, most amazing day of my life. And I know even better ones lay ahead of us. He inched forward, pressing his body alongside hers. Bracing her palms on his sturdy chest, she tilted her face upward in anticipation of his kiss. Before their lips made contact, however, someone knocked on the door. "It's unlocked," Ash called. Marcus appeared in the doorway, toting a small wheeled suitcase. The faint light from the hall silhouetted his slender frame as he watched them from several feet away. Despite the shadows, Geneva could recognize every familiar detail down to the hunger in his stare, and she drew in a sharp breath as she realized how much she wanted him, how much she wanted both of them. "I didn't mean to intrude," he said, interrupting her thoughts. "I figured you'd assume I'd be here shortly." "You're not intruding." She extended her hand toward him, beckoning him inside. "We got here just a moment ago." "I wouldn't have blamed you if you'd gotten started without me." He set down his luggage beside a wooden dresser and joined them in the center of the room. "As it's your special day, we can celebrate any way you'd like tonight." Without leaving Ash's embrace, she half turned toward Marcus, tugging at the collar of his button-down shirt and using it to pull him closer. Her other hand remained on Ash's chest, above his heart. Glancing back and forth between them, she burst out in a fit of giggles. "What's so funny?" Marcus asked. She let her hand skim down his side until it rested at his waist. "All this time, and I still can't figure out how to decide which one of you to kiss." He joined in her laughter. "A dilemma with which I am quite familiar." Ash's hand also drifted lower, and he gave her hip a mischievous squeeze. "I'm with Marcus on this one. You're in charge tonight." "Me?" she scoffed. "The one who's infamous for her inability to make decisions?" "It's all worked out for the best so far, don't you think?" Marcus steered her back toward her husband. "Why don't you continue what you were doing before I arrived? I'll figure it out." Geneva allowed Ash to guide her lips to his. Their tongues tangled together, engaging in sweet spirals and probing explorations. As they resumed their prior kiss, another set of lips floated across her bare shoulder. Marcus swept her hair to one side from behind and continued along his path to the side of her neck. While Ash held her in place with one gentle palm cradling each side of her face, Marcus's hands glided down her body, coming to rest at the swell of her hips. They didn't linger for long, though, as they slipped around to her stomach. While he continued to pepper faint kisses along her skin, his hands rose to cup her chest, skimming over the silky fabric of her dress. His strong fingers sank into her flesh. A whimper strained in her throat, but Ash refused to relent, preventing her from speaking. Marcus continued to fondle and knead, and his teeth grazed the sensitive spot at the juncture between her neck and shoulder. She jolted, and he let out a low chuckle near her ear. Though her options for movement were limited, she rolled her hips backward, lengthening the connection between them. She longed to reach for him, to tear his pants away and reacquaint herself with every detail of him. But the two men kept her trapped between them. He abandoned her heaving chest, and she grumbled at the loss of contact, though the sound was stifled by Ash's fervent kiss. Marcus's fingers found the top of the zipper at the back of her dress and tugged at it. The deliberate scratch as he dragged the zipper down inch by painstaking inch echoed in her ears, and she shuddered at his feathery touch as he pushed the straps down her arms. Oh, unfortunately, I think I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Conquering the Skies, which is available at Amazon on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Email WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, WalterSterlingShow.com, WalterSterlingShow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Music director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland. That's me. Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Dan and Becky Gaffney, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brooke and Matus Bumball, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Quantum Physics Dave Scott, a Canadian, Ross Coulthart, an Australian, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance Craig Kitchen, Program originated by Chris Olivero, Long-Suffering Executives David Yagroff and Greg Stalker, with respect Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard. A great way to end.